for Tuesday, November 18th. The last secondary call. So we have a form. Let's move to the transit operations report.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
We have the fairly standard report. You'll see as we get through it that we've made a couple adjustments to it, one of which will continue for a while. The other one's hopefully a one-time report. Customer complaints on bus remain constant over the prior month, 2.63 per 100,000 boardings. The operator assignment ratio in the past 6 months, we've experienced a drop due to attrition and an increase in long-term leaves. In October, we were 158 FTEs short. That's a combination of full-time and part-time operators. We've certified 52 students in September and currently have a class with 55 students in session. We have classes scheduled for December and then starting in January. Two classes per month scheduled with a minimum of 30 students per class.
Chairman, may I come
in? Yes.
This is a very, it's not a good place to be. Mr. Mitchell also, I should say, in addition to that, he's asked for some service reductions as approved by the board in the December shakeup that will help remediate the situation. We've just fallen too low for a variety of reasons, and this will be corrected soon after the December shakeup.
So this whole trend starting from May, we have plans to bring it back?
Yes.
The rail assignment ratio is within the target. We're on target with the budget for fare revenues, year-to-date actuals in October, slightly more than the year-to-date budget. On direct and contracted bus boardings, the October average weekday boardings dropped slightly, a decrease of 1.5% compared to September. Orange Line also down slightly, actually a larger reduction of 4.3% to September. Unfortunately, also rail down 4%. For October. We've continued now since I believe last November over 70% on on-time performance and going back and looking at prior history, it's dropped each year in the fall when the LA Unified School District resumes classes. We're working on the increased management presence, including ensuring that the operators are leaving the terminals on time, and we're focusing also on the top 10, the late and early operators to help us improve that performance. Sir.
So, voting on the red line for voting on the
I'm going to take my glasses off.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Let's just label the left part.
No.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Nice the numbers.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to comment on this. You know, I'm not at all satisfied with this. I'm sorry, on the on-time performance, Lonnie? All right. But this shows significant progress. We've also suppressed buses running ahead of schedule, which I'm pleased with, although it's still too high. I want to just note that we reported to the board earlier in the year that in the previous 8 years, I think we'd had 2 months in a row of 70% or higher about three or four times over an eight-year period, or it was 2 months in a row, and that was the longest time that occurred. Here we have 12 months in a row. So this really speaks to the issue of rebuilding the culture in transportation and maintenance operations of service. We're not where we need to be, but we're on the proper path to where we need to get to.
Okay.
Yes, sir. One of the items we have not been reporting, but had been tracking all along, was the bus cleanliness. And we're working hard to improve the overall cleanliness of the buses. To date, the average cleanliness ratings for all 11 divisions, 7.7%, with two to three of them, depending on the month, over the 8.0 goal that we'd set. We're placing high priority on improving that cleanliness as part of our effort to improve our overall performance. For the fifth consecutive month, accidents per 100,000 hub miles continue to be better than our budgeted target of 3.14. Mean miles between mechanical failures increased. This is a good thing. In the month of October, we've been working with the Road Call Reduction Committee and implementing some of the recommendations they'd put forth, and so we continue working on this to improve that reliability.
What do we think really is a good number based on industry practice for miles between failures?
You know, you've seen a range from 3,000 to maybe 10, 12,000, something like that. I think that we probably ought to review this again and get focused on it. I have mentioned to you in the past about certain levels of deferred maintenance, which we need to stop doing on rolling stock and facilities. I think we should probably look at what others are doing and then adjust for speeds. Systems that have higher average hourly speeds can accumulate higher miles between road failures, but it's not really indicative of a better fleet. It's just a function of the nature of the system. So we probably ought to spend some time on this issue and try to figure out what to do with it. And so maybe we'll come back next month to this committee with more details on that.
Excellent.
Forthcoming December service change. We went out as described on the slide here and held a number of sessions with operators in all the divisions. Basically, scheduling staff listened, and we've taken an effort to improve based upon the input from those closest to the service. And I've got an example here I'd like to point out. In one example, an operator pointed out the Venice Boulevard westbound morning trips were overloaded and therefore had been causing pass-ups. The scheduling staff followed up with that suggestion and conducted a number of observations to validate whether that statement was correct. And then once we validated that, immediately added two additional trips and incorporated those into the final December shakeup. Sir, this is the one I referred to that would be hopefully a one-time report. We had put something out in writing to alert the board where we are, but I've got a couple of slides here to report on that peer review. The CEO requested peer review this summer in response to the two Blue Line accidents that occurred in July. And the panel came out four people, and they concluded that those operations were delivered safely in a manner consistent with the industry practices and procedures. And they finalized that report saying they saw no real red flags or significant issues with those operations. They did leave us with a number of observations and recommendations. I've listed them here and would highlight a couple. A shortage of operators and high absenteeism. We've just mentioned that. And as indicated, we've been working the last few months to train additional operators. They also suggested a more visible presence of law enforcement. And we've been holding meetings on a monthly basis, cops and operations to address some of those concerns. They also suggested we take a look at differences in in the facilities at the various terminals for operators, and we went back and to look at all of that, and there was no issue. And they made, I think, a very good observation in terms of following up with employees absent from work. And we've been working with risk management and HR to put in place a comprehensive plan to ensure that that's included in the training that we're going to be rolling out to the newly selected division managers. A couple of the recommendations they mentioned, they suggested that we needed to fill two vacant staff positions in the OCI training department. We've done that. They suggested we take a look at the practice for Horn and Bell applications. We'd actually done that previously, and note that we'll do that each time we have a new startup on another line, with Expo being the next one. Probably the most important one in terms of recommendations, they suggested that we evaluate to work our assignments and develop on a minimum standard of 10 hours rest between shifts. It was really focused on the extra board operators, and we're going to end up addressing any concern about hours of rest based upon the effort to hire additional operators. And I would note that we're currently in conformance with the collective bargaining agreement.
Mr. Mitchell, I can comment on this. Mr. Fasano, the chair, might recall that back in the 80s, we had a pretty serious problem with issues of fatigue. That was really a function of an operator shortage. When that occurs, and you have high levels of overtime, then the overtime becomes predictable, and operators can actually manage the system. They can go sick if they want a certain day off, knowing they can make it up with overtime and net out additional pay later on at their own convenience. It also can get into a situation where an operator may have an accident and then claim, whether rightly or wrongly, it was a function of fatigue. That is a situation which we have to manage much better than we are at the current time. That was the issue we commented on a few moments ago. So we're on the right path to get that corrected. In the case, however, of the 8-hour rest period, that has, in my estimation, has really not been a significant contributor to any safety or accident problem that I've ever heard of. I think going to a 10-hour rest period would cost very large sums of money. Whatever we do on the Blue Line would apply to the bus system. And so we'd spend a whole lot of money addressing a problem which is a low probability event to begin with. So I think that we're doing the right thing addressing the issues of overtime and VCBs.
Okay.
Two others I'll just highlight. The fitness for duty review, and we agree with that, and making that a part of the training syllabus that we've be putting in place for all managers, and specifically for the new division managers. And then the last one on there listed review consistency and application of discipline, and it's also going to be part of a training effort with our new managers. Okay. And subject to any questions, that completes my presentation.
Appreciate any questions by members. Okay, let's move to item two, which is the item for the purchase of the 100 compressed natural gas composite buses from NABBE based on the option.
I have John Roberts here to provide a brief report, sir.
John Roberts, Deputy Executive Officer, Operations. This is a recommendation to authorize the Chief Executive to establish a LIFA project budget for the purchase of up to 100 compressed natural gas composite buses for the FY12 capital program, including budget contingencies in the amount of $67,977.54. It's also to negotiate and execute a contract option with North American Bus Industries to purchase up to 100 high-capacity composite buses for a price not to exceed $67,092,524, increasing the total contract from $257 million to $324 million. Also to authorize the chief, the staff to negotiate and execute modification for the procurement in amount not to exceed $1 million. again, increase in the total contract value from $324,275,000 to $325,275,000. This is part of our ongoing fleet replacement plan. The buses that are being replaced are at the board-approved 13-year or over mileage. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that this is reducible to a sole source of sorts. It's a significant amount of money, and I have a very difficult time understanding why we are not dealing with this on a competitive bid basis. How do we know that we can't get a better price? The response has been up to this point that take between 18 and 24 months to start a new procurement, etc. But I'm quite sure and am prepared to be disabused of this notion that it was anticipated that this day would come. Therefore, 18 to 24 months ago, we should have and could have been in the process of planning. I think there is a pattern and practice of bad habits that can be corrected, should be, and I'm anxiously awaiting the arrival of the audit report on the issue of sole source. The preliminary data suggests that we are being disadvantaged by it, and further, those who would otherwise have an opportunity to compete are being disadvantaged. Mr. Chair, it would seem to me that this warrants some response of consequence from wherever it may come.
Yeah, I'll ask for a response on that. Following up on that, my next question would be, how much of our fleet today is NABI?
Right now, the number of NABI buses is right around close to 1,800. I don't have the exact number, but it's around 1,800 of our 2,500 buses. We did a competitive negotiation back in 2008 with some options. This is exercising one of those options. It is our plan to, we're in the process of rewriting our specifications for a 40-foot bus, which we anticipate coming back to the board probably in February, which will start a new procurement.
So this was competed back when, and as this was commonly done, there was an option.
That's correct.
You're now seeking to get exercised.
Correct.
Well, you know, I want to follow up, but I need to talk to Tom. May have more questions.
Understand and share the concern agency-wide in terms of too many sole sources and not having competitive procurements.
On the other hand, it seems, you know, one example in the airline industry, Southwest is the one where you have one manufacturer, one type of vehicle, which does promote efficiencies and the ability to timely deliver passengers on a daily basis. I also presume that the procurement law prohibits us from training standardized procurement. I think in this particular case, perhaps the results of the as well.
From a support standpoint, that's certainly true in terms of training, repair parts, inventory issues. I'd note that this could be called a sole source buy, but it's an option on what was originally in a competitive contract.
I think as regards to fleet, I mean, probably true that, I mean, if operations people could, they'd like to pick out, have a consolidated fleet because it makes life simpler. We can't do that. Each procurement is a new procurement, and there's only a couple. How many bus manufacturers are selling 40s and 50s?
Probably three or four.
On the outside?
Correct.
You know, most, there's the number of folks that manufacture buses in the country is very small. It's not like automobiles used to be at all, or computers or whatever it might be. The point is, though, this was competed, and there was a competition. NABBE was rated highest. I wasn't here at the time, but this is simply an option off that competition.
Correct.
Which has been done commonly around the country. Now, when the options expire, then we have no choice but to have a full-on competition for any future purchases. We said that the board could certainly decide not to exercise the option for whatever reason, but it was competed.
Director Ridley-Thomas, did you have a follow-up?
When was the competition? I'm looking at the...
This was in 2008. One, I believe that was the award date.
Prior to that, what was the status of this particular service or procurement?
I don't have the history in front of me, but we've had several procurements over the last 10 years. We do have some New Flyer buses in our fleet. We have the articulated buses, the 40-foot buses, the 45-foot buses. So we've had several competitive bids over the last 10 years of where we are with our current fleet right now.
Just for sake of your own mental math, you know, if we have 2,000 buses to pick a number, and if we're going to replace them on an average of 13 years, 13 into 2,000 gives a certain number, let's say 150, whatever that number is. That would mean that we have to buy 150 buses per year every year to maintain the retirement age of 13. So when you go out to bid, you can't have 15 options. Two or three options on a purchase is about as high as you're going to get.
Great.
This is consistent with that national practice.
I've gone back and taken a look in the...
Pardon me for a second. Thanks very much for the lesson in new math, Mr. Leahy. Let me just stick with the old version for a moment. What is the increase here, if anything? It moves from what?
I'm sorry, the increase in...
Per vehicle?
No, the aggregate.
These are replacement coaches.
Yeah, but is there a change in the expenditure that we are about to incur or not?
I'd have to recheck to make that determination. Right at the top of my head, I can't answer that. If there was an increase in the actual cost per bus.
Well, it's a pretty straightforward consideration that I'm seeking to get a response to.
So are you looking at the increase in the option, if there's an increase in the cost from the prior base bid?
Yeah. What are the numbers currently, and what do they go to in terms of increase?
So we have that increase.
You certainly have a price per unit on the base order than the price per unit on the options.
Correct. I
need to get it.
We can get that and provide it. I've got notes here that we had contracts for competitive contracts in 1998 and 2000, in 2002, and 2003, in 2008, and in 2009.
Okay, I do have an answer. The price increase was a 2.16% on this next option. 2.16%.
In actual dollars?
Comes out to about $12,934 per bus.
And the aggregate would ultimately be?
Be times 100 buses.
29,000.
Should be... $1.2 million or $1.3 million.
So if there's a contract, what is the current contract, and what would it balloon to if it were to be increased? It's not to exceed how much?
The current contract would take the value of $257,183,000 with this additional buses to 324,000 or 324 million, $175,000.
A potential increase of
$67 million.
$67 million.
Correct.
Therein lies the point that I'm trying to unpack here. Namely, this is not simply a contractual extension that says this is the amount that was in place and we're essentially renewing or extending, but in fact the potential for an additional $67 million. Is that not correct?
Correct.
I think that's material, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. CEO. Therefore, if you don't wish to call it sole sourcing, it ought to be viewed in terms of how, in fact, other entities, whomever they might be, and I say this without prejudice or preference, unless we are just going to embrace an anti-competitive environment, you've got to, in some way, be able to justify how a potential contract moves $67 million without any other consideration from perspective.
At the time of following the procedures, at the time of award of a competitive contract, if there are options, those options have
Mr.
to be evaluated.
Chair, let me just say this for the purposes of clarification. I'm hardly inclined to be disabused of the point that I made, no matter what staff may say. My view is as follows. Bad practices take place when you have a non-competitive environment. Preferential consideration is given. And further, you can have every conceivable justification for not doing it that you may wish. But at the end of the day, you perpetuate practices that, in my view, are questionable. And I think the board should own, with its eyes wide open, what that looks like and what implications that might then portend. I've heard everybody's point of view. Few companies do this. Standard practice throughout the industry, etc. Somebody's being advantaged. Somebody else is being disadvantaged from my point of view. What cures that? A competitive environment.
Okay, I appreciate that input. Director Robinson, do you have any input on this side? I'll just say at this point, in this case, I actually would be supportive of the staff recommendation. I don't think there's votes to move it forward with a recommendation. Is there a willingness to send it to the board without it? Okay. We'll send it to the full board without recommendation. Can we move to item 3? Item 3 is the research program and jury surveys.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Raymond. I'm the Chief Communications Officer. Today, we've had an opportunity to bring together four different types of research, our annual customer satisfaction surveys, our public opinion survey, as well as a customer focus groups of consisting of writers and non-writers, and also a competitive analysis of how we would stack up based on Google trip planning for speed through corridors, bus versus car. And so today I have Jeff Boberg here, who's actually going to walk you through the highlights of the findings of these studies. Jeff.
Hello. Excuse me. Hello. I'm Jeff Boberg, and excuse me. This spring, we did a comprehensive research analysis of four different types of research. We convened two focus groups, choice riders and non-riders, to talk about barriers and factors that have them choose or not choose transit and some advertising concepts. We did our onboard customer satisfaction survey, which we do every spring. We've done it for the last 7 years. and the general public tracking survey, which is a telephone survey that we do generally every 2 years, but it's been 4 years since we've done it. And that's more of, that's for a Los Angeles County residents to gauge their awareness and perception of Metro services. And a new part of it is how they get their news and information, in part because of the rapidly changing technology and how people get their information. And then we also did a competitive analysis of transit versus driving using, as Matt said, Google. It's Google Maps directions, and then I don't know if you guys have done that before, but there's a transit versus a car, and that gives you a travel time. First, the focus groups. For the most part, the people who were choice transit riders had costs that they associated with driving, whether it be time costs of finding parking or putting money into the meters, and also convenience, the fact that they could, that Metro went to just about everywhere they wanted to go. For the folks who are not transit riders, it was generally a matter of time. The trip was much longer by bus, or convenience, or they also talked about a stigma that a lot of these people had tried it in different areas of the United States, Chicago, New York, even traveling in Europe. But one of the comments is it's not that socially acceptable. It's not like in Europe. And then we asked people of both focus groups to different words and how well they associated with Metro or not associated with Metro. And as you can see, those who ride us frequently, there are frequent choice riders, have a much higher opinion of how rapid it is, how safe it is, how efficient it is, and how competent we are versus those who haven't.
So can I ask a quick question here? The riders, we consider to be choice riders, we don't consider them to be transit.
No, we've done several focus groups in the past, and we've asked our general riders, and we do the onboard survey to ask all our riders, but the idea about this was we were trying to get at, why do people ride when they have a choice? Why do people not ride when they have a choice?
These are choice riders.
We asked them in a pre-screening when we called them and invited them. The questions were, are you a frequent rider? And then do you have an option other than transit to get to where you're going? So whether maybe their spouse has a car or they have a car, or they can ride a bike or whatever, they choose transit over another option. That's what we were trying to get at with this.
You know, I guess for my question is, to me, this is kind of free because 95% of the population, people with over age or are throughout this county, really don't know us. When we work with this right, the number of trips that are generated in the county. The transit most year is very low. So I guess what comes to mind is, what can we do to, do we want to serve these people knowing that we lose money on every trip generated, knowing that we have congestion corridors, knowing that many of these people pay more than what we charge for the other services we can provide, and that we don't provide. Should we be coming back at these potential customers for carpools or other sources? I'm trying to get a sense of what it is we can do to reach out to those that jump.
Yeah, actually, when we were doing the Measure R studies in the past, we did find that the more familiar people were with Metro, the more they liked us, the more they supported us, the more they supported Measure R. And yeah, I totally agree that we need to hit on multiple fronts. In fact, at the end of this presentation, it shows how we compete in corridors from a time basis, where in some corridors we're very competitive, and in other corridors, we're not. In other words, when somebody identifies a trip they want to make, let's say from Long Beach to downtown or something, how does Metro compete compared to a car? So if you're a choice rider, how do you, you know, which would you choose given the differences in time? And what we are finding is in some places we're very competitive, which means we have a very good opportunity to increase ridership to attract the discretionary customers. In other corridors, we're not. And that's where we do need to look at either alternatives like the van pools, which you've brought up at previous meetings. Carpooling, obviously, is an example. And then also just how we, you know, the rail lines are typically always competitive from a speed standpoint. So even how we operate that system and integrate the bus and rail system, there's a lot of opportunities out there to increase ridership. And also to your point about the subsidy per passenger, as long as we have capacity and we keep adding customers, that actually improves our, you know, our operating ratio. So if we can increase customers where we have capacity on our better services, then, you know, we can improve both in terms of increasing ridership as well as revenue.
I think report 94 is
we may want to look at would be helpful.
Oh, definitely.
Now on to our, this is part of our onboard customer satisfaction survey. And as you can see, again, I had put this, again, the to know us is to love us. I guess it's a little repetitive, but people who actually are on the service, find that it's convenient. It meets their needs. Drivers are courteous. Seats are available. Bus on time are all above our targets. That's 70% is the target. Look at choice riders. After a high point, spring 2006, it's ebbed down. I think in part because of our choice riders generally are our commuters, and with the recession, there are fewer people taking any, you know, whether it's highway or transit to work, and so that affects us. This is pretty interesting. These are people who are on board at the time of the survey, whether or not they have a cell phone with them. It's not someone who has it at home and says, "Oh yes, I have it." It's someone who's carrying a cell phone. Which hasn't changed much since we started asking it last year, but it's at 70%. But the percentage of smartphones is almost doubled. It was 25% last year. It's now 44%, and I expect it to keep going up. And that's a national trend as well. That's not just here or just transit riders, but smartphones are, as you probably know. Okay, now on to the telephone survey. This is LA County residents as a whole, not just. So we've gone from a focus group of our riders, our choice riders, to all riders, an onboard survey of all our riders, to now all of Los Angeles County, of which, as you say, about 10% ride transit frequently. And, excuse me, even though a smaller percentage uses us, the awareness is now almost 100%. It's at 98% awareness. And then as far as overall people, riders include mostly non-riders, but also riders. Perception of them being clean and the fares are reasonable. And you look down at the last one, Metro uses tax dollars wisely. I think we're caught up in other things going on because obviously Measure R was just passed, and when we did this survey 4 years ago, we had 66%, I believe, or a little bit less, 64%, saying that Metro uses tax dollars wisely. So that might be not just Metro, but government in general. Okay. We also asked if you were going to look up transit service today, how would you do it? And 77% said they use the internet in some way. I broke that out. You can see 50% of that, 77%, would go online, just a generic go online. But 19% would, you know, mention metro.net, and then 8% was Google Maps. So it's more, you know, people, as technology increases in people's lives, they're going to start using it to do anything from looking up bus service to, I guess, ordering pizza. Okay, and finally, the competitive analysis. This was using, as I said, the Google Maps. First, these are competitive or favorable corridors, North Hollywood to downtown LA. Not too surprising with the red line there. Pasadena to downtown LA, El Monte to downtown. And these are all minutes. So just over an hour, Pomona to downtown, Pasadena to Santa Monica. And then for the corridors, or not competitive or unfavorable, Long Beach to downtown LA, El Monte to Southgate, Culver City to Long Beach, Montebello to Norwalk, West Adams to Lawndale. I live in Long Beach and I commute every day via Blue Line to downtown. It depends on where you live in Long Beach. If you're near a station, obviously it's going to be competitive because I can get here as fast as a car using the Blue Line, but that's just a personal. Okay, general observations. As we said, the awareness is nearly 100%. People have heard of us, and many people know us. Familiarity breeds support. If you've ridden us, you have a much higher opinion of us than if you hadn't. Perceptual barriers using the system remain. Customer satisfaction remains high. Rapid mitigation in technology. Discretionary riders in decline. And transit is competitive to car in some corridors, and as Matt said, or Mr. Raymond said, not in off peak. This is AM peak or PM peak in heavily used corridors.
Are there any data sources, census or others, that capture origin destination information for customers? Lend themselves to future marketing.
We do an origin destination survey through our modeling department, and I believe they are in the field this fall or early next spring. I'm not entirely sure, but we should have, we will be able to use that data. I've helped out on designing their survey instrument a little bit, and so we will have origins and destinations through that survey that we can use.
Yeah, and some of the other things we looked at too is like the inquiries that happen on the internet, as well as the phone calls, to see if we can pull a sampling of that to kind of identify where people go. Because yeah, there's a lot of trips that we look at on these things that aren't, you know, captured. And also the Google sampling we did, you could do that for any corridor. It's just, we just picked a sampling of them just to see where we were competitive and not competitive. And also look at it from a perspective of what the customer would see if they were investigating our service online. So if they went to, you know, Google Maps and they wanted to know about how to get downtown or get somewhere else, how the bus or transit would be competitive to a car. So we try to look at it from that perspective.
That concludes my presentation.
Appreciate it. Questions? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Item 4, which is the report on receiving final of web communications.
I'm not getting it on here.
Hi, Amson, the DEO of Creative Services, will be actually giving this presentation as she's trying to overcome technical difficulties.
Did you put it on, right?
It's on.
Sorry. I'll just get briefly started on there. This is just going to be a brief executive level summary on the results of our web rebuild. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the website, but it had not been significantly rebuilt in over 10 years. And by that, I mean a back-end rebuild. You would have seen different front, you know, homepage designs, but actually rebuilt the sort of undersides of the site had not been addressed in over 10 years. We currently had 8,000 pages and 25,000 PDFs. So the website is growing, as you can well imagine, on a daily basis. So we rebuilt and launched the site back in February of this year, and we've been adding additional new technology and features incrementally since that time. So we now have For example, news alerts, service alerts are posted automatically. And you have access to the trip planner, and Google Maps are also here on the home page. So just want to mention also, we think of Metro often as a service provider and transportation program provider, but we are increasingly becoming a provider of online information and data and spaces for building community. So this slide is a remarkable slide in that it shows the increase in number of visitors to our site in just the past year. We've had site traffic is up over 57%, 45% number of visitors up, and unique visitors, which is an important number, is up by 46%. So the website is seeing the highest web traffic in its history. The increase in traffic, we know why we have an increase in traffic. The major reason is this search engine optimization, and that search engine traffic is up 187%, and you can see in the pie charts there those numbers. So what that means is when people are looking for information, instead of going to metro.net, they go to Google and they look for information. And that is, and then when they're looking for that, it immediately takes them to Metro, comes up very high in the search rankings. You can see here, I just did this I think yesterday, and WMATA in DC is in the first spot, but when you enter the word Metro, metro.net comes up first, second, and third in a Google search. And what that also means, there are other terms that we have worked into our site so that when somebody Googles Measure R, we come up as the first in the first search in Google again, and the second one as well. And for when you search 3010, we come up again number one in that search. In addition to transportation and transit information, we have information on our projects. Just this section, which is the projects and programs, we have over 100,000 page views a month, and that is steadily increasing every month. We have 93 projects that are on this section of the site, and that is growing daily as we add additional projects. We also have the project tracker and the project map so that our visitors can track the Measure R projects. And here's a project page example showing some of the technology that we're adding. This is the 405 page. So we have mobile, social media, RSS feeds, etc., providing information to the public. And then in addition to doing project pages, we do features for the site. So this, for example, is the safety feature. It's our transit education program, which we launched just last month, I think it was, and already getting great response to this from across the country. This slide shows that, in fact, we're much more than the web now. It used to just be the web was the online source of information, but we now have a blog, the source. We have a number of social networks linking to our site and us back to those social networks. We have a number of mobile applications, and we have a developer site. The developer site is where we post our transit information so that third-party developers can go in and develop applications. The most well-known of those is Google Transit. They actually use our data to have what we were talking about earlier in terms of Google Maps, where you can have the option to use transit rather than drive. We already know that there are 14 known applications by third-party developers, iPhone, Android applications that have been developed with our media. And then we also are embarking on a number of new media efforts. The source I mentioned earlier, that launched in November 2009, it's an advocacy tool for us as an agency, and we try to translate transportation and government policy issues, which are often quite difficult for the public to understand, in a more user-friendly language. We also educate and inform and keep our constituents abreast of Metro News.
We had just our average monthly postings this year have been 100 postings a month. So this is regularly updated, this blog. And then the blog itself also goes out to Facebook, and it posts to our project pages. So you see the West Side Subway project page here on the lower right. And when Steve Hyman, the editor of The Source, posted from the boardroom, I think it took about 10 minutes, and it was posted on the website as the most recent news on that particular project. And these are our numbers on Facebook. We have over 3,800 fans. We also have a number of individual project Facebook pages, and we're also active with Twitter. We use that for our service alerts and the I-405. We're averaging about 10 new fans every day. Then this shows the number of fans. We're ahead of every other transportation agency in the U.S., with the exception of BART, up there in tech-savvy San Francisco. And then our next steps, to summarize, we actually just did this. I prepared this slide presentation a little bit earlier. We have now done some cosmetic improvements to Trip Planner, and we've incorporated Google Maps and made just the overall user interface a little bit more attractive and user-friendly. We're designing and developing a number of new mobile tools, and we just continue to add features and technology as resources allow. We are also performing an analysis and looking at our resources to see how we can sustain and expand our media and new media and digital resources so that we can continue to meet the ever-increasing demand for these types of services. And then I'll open it up to any questions.
A lot of great information. Our website is providing all these information points. So I'm going to be curious. Smartphones, be a greater penetration out there. Questions by members of the committee?
Just wanted to commend you on a great job in trying to upgrade the website, because as we have so many projects, especially with Measure R and 3010 and all the other projects going on, this is going to be an incredible tool for the public's use with regard to finding alternatives, and hopefully public transportation be one of the alternatives of choice, and being able to tap into our system to find out what's going on. Because maneuvering the city with even things that are going on the west side, with all the projects that will be competing for space, will be so invaluable for people just to figure it out. So thank you for your efforts in that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item 5, which is the Metrolink quarterly report. I'm going to ask if we can tighten this report up, just given the time of day. Sorry for the very short notice.
Yes, sir, we absolutely can. Alex Clifford here. Mr. Chair, directors, to provide you the monthly update. You have the written report, so what we've done is just extract a few slides to present. And I need to show Jay, I'm sorry. We're trying to get more tech savvy here.
Try to make it as quickly as you can, because we're in danger of running out of time, please.
Absolutely. Okay, so just rolling through a couple of slides that apparently we're not going to be able to show you, but they're in the back of your presentation. You'll be able to look at the revenues. You'll see that we're doing a little bit better job this year tracking revenues against projected revenues. We've provided you some slides about ridership, really reinforcing what's occurred since 2008 with the drop of ridership. We've also provided you some additional slides kind of correlating that to unemployment in the region. You can see that direct correlation. And then we provided you an additional slide, which was not in your packet, that we'll get you, which correlates to gasoline prices. We've also shown you ridership on the various lines, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you have about that report or the slides that we have attached.
Appreciate the report. The report was very detailed in terms of Metrolink. Any comments by CEO?
I would like to note that they are going to meet here in this room tomorrow, actually, and talk about the car procurement as directed by the board. We've been in negotiations with them to assist. I'm hopeful at this point that they will go forward tomorrow.
Okay, appreciate that. Questions by members of the committee? Okay, we appreciate the report. Let's next move to the, I think we have an item that was on the supplemental agenda, which was the off-peak transit for schools item that Mayor Villaraigosa had put on the Finance and Budget, Executive Management and Operations Committee.
Mr. Chair, if you like, they already voted to send it to the board. I can give you a brief summary of the discussion.
We'll just have a quick summary knowing it's going to the board.
The notion is that during the off-peak period, ridership is low. So perhaps the action is to direct the CEO to come back in January with a report that would outline a procedure for field trips. These are not just people going wherever they want to go. It's a field trip authorized by a school with a teacher during the off-peak period. It would be on a reservation basis, not just a pandemonium out there. When we come back, I will also suggest that we add a transit teaching component to the thing so that the students would learn about how to ride buses and trains and what the good of transit is. I think it's exciting. The idea of having the ability to go to the county museums or to Alvera Street or whatever it might be on an MTA route is very exciting and a good thing to do. So it'll come forward at the next board meeting.
I concur. I don't think we need a motion since it's already going to the board. Any questions by members of the committee? Okay, we will next move to the oral report of the Transit Services Bureau.
Good afternoon. Pat Jordan with the LA County Sheriff's Department. Just want to introduce you to a new concept we've been working on for the last several months where we're working on integrating our security and law enforcement services to make them more effective and efficient. I want to introduce some of my partners in this effort. One of them is Paul Turley from RMI International, our contract security services, and Jake Lopez and Sergeant Ty Henderson from the MTA Security Department. My PowerPoint didn't make it, so I'm just going to read off this, but it's pretty basic, so it'll be fine. One of the first things we established as we began integrating our services is the need to give a brand or a name, and we came on the name of Los Angeles Metro Protective Services. So that's the brand to describe all the different partners that are involved in protecting Metro. We also developed a mission statement, and that mission statement is the Los Angeles Protective Services LAMPS provides the highest level of customer services by dedicating ourselves to the safety and security of the Metro community. So this is the mission that we want all of our security partners, not only the ones here today, but our community law enforcement partners as they come to help out, and Metro, other Metro employees, as well as our transit riders. And we focused on customer service. As you can see, most of the presentations focus on customer service, and we have an important role in customer service. The riding experience is not only about being on time performance, not only about cleanliness, but how safe you feel. It also depends on us taking care of the people who want to ruin that ride environment, so how we handle the law enforcement and security and take those guys off the system. To do that, we identified five SMART goals. Two of them focus on customer service first. And the first one is the perception of safety and security. You can run a very safe transit system, but if the public doesn't believe it's safe, they don't ride. As you saw two surveys or two presentations ago, 71% of the public, both riding and non-riding, believe the system is safe. Previous studies have showed, or previous surveys have showed, 88 to 91% felt the system was safe. Our goal is to get to that level and stay at that level so it encourages non-riders or people who have the option to take cars to look at transit as an option. We see that as an important contribution that security can make, and that's about the perception of security. So that's how you send your message, that's being visible on the system. The second SMART goal also deals with customer service, but that's more the nuts and bolts of law enforcement. That's about good response times, that's about reducing crime, and it's also about decreasing fare evasion. Fare evasion is a key component towards keeping disorder down on the transit system. When you throw some handcuffs on some guys that aren't paying their fare or are violating some crime, that also sends a message that we take disorder serious and our system is safe. The third SMART goal is unity of voice. As we surveyed all of our partners a few months ago, we found that not everybody felt like there was unity in our effort or that they had a voice in the process. So our goal was to bring all the different levels of security and together, meaning all different ranks, all the different actors, and develop one voice, one strategy that we were going to use to keep the system safe. But not just the strategy that we would use, we would advocate for a strategy for Metro to embrace, to use to keep the system safe. Strategies that don't include just how we do our job, but our expectations of transit employees or Metro employees, as well as our transit patrons. The fourth SMART goal is resource utilization. In these times, of course, you know, budgets are tight, and we want to look at our staff and make sure that we're using the appropriate personnel with the appropriate job. So you look for the right tool for the right task, and we look at our different partners who have different levels of authority, and we apply them to something that's more appropriate, that allows us to be more effective and efficient in doing our job. That includes eliminating duplication of effort and expanding the use of security in roles that are more traditional to them, that are high visibility but lower cost. The fifth one is a reward and recognition program. If we're going to keep this system safe, then we have to embrace the concept that everybody has a role in safety and security. It starts by rewarding our people that are part of the team, but it also includes rewarding Metro employees who are not necessarily security employees, maybe bus division managers or bus operators, but rewarding them and recognizing them for actions that they take to keep their bus safe, to keep their bus division safe, or keep a rail line safe. Safety isn't, or security is not just the law enforcement security's job, it's everybody's job. That is, in essence, the LAMPS. We're still working out some of the rough details on how we want to implement and some of the programs we want to implement. We're still getting input from the line officers. We've dealt with the lieutenants and the sergeants collectively. Now we're talking to all the security officers and the deputy sheriffs. We look forward to rolling that out over the next couple of months, and I will update you as we go along.
Thank you, Captain.
Okay.
Hey, we thank you.
Okay.
Let's move to item 7, which is the report of the CEO.
Just wanted to let you know that we had an unfortunate incident on Sunday when a passenger assailed and another passenger, elderly passenger, pushed the elderly passenger on the tracks where she hit her head, suffering terminal injuries, fatal injuries. The assailant was arrested under psychological evaluation right now. We've had some issues with ARRA funds in some of the cities. Mr. Taylor, brief report, please.
Caltrans has informed 10 of our cities and us that they haven't found the paperwork submitted justifying the expenditure of those stimulus funds to be up to snuff. We're working with Caltrans and those cities to make sure that paperwork is complete.
Thank you. Okay, that moves us to, I'll ask at this time, item 8 is a closed session item, a transit security briefing. Is there a public comment? Okay, we will adjourn to the closed session, and I do not anticipate any reportable actions out of this committee. Are there any items by my colleagues?
Thank you.